This is Ben Plotinsky, the managing editor of City Journal. I'm here with Paul Howard, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and the director of its Center for Medical Progress. Paul, welcome to the latest City Journal podcast.
I'm very happy to be here.
Your new story for City Journal, Paul, is entitled Healthcare's New Entrepreneurs. For most of us, the idea of a healthcare entrepreneur may not mean a whole lot. So maybe you can give us a couple of examples of who these new entrepreneurs are and what they're doing, and at the same time, what problems with the healthcare system as it exists they're trying to solve.
Well, let me first just say for a moment what it is that an entrepreneur does. And an entrepreneur is someone who brings, I think, a new service or a new product to consumers, either a product or service that hasn't existed before, or a lower cost product, or a higher value product. So I think those are all things I talk about in my City Journal article. And just to give an example of something that people might be more familiar with, let's take Walmart's entry into the generic drug market, where back in 2006, they began offering generic drugs for $4 for a 30-day prescription. Of course, there was lots of disparity in generic drug prices, so Walmart used its size to do for prescription medicines, generic medicines, what it has done for other consumer good, which is push prices down as low as it could possibly go. And they've expanded that list since then, offering drugs for everything from epilepsy to even some cancer drugs for very low prices, and other competitors have followed suit. So now people who don't have health insurance or maybe underinsured or just want to pay less for their prescription drugs can go to Walmart or Kroger's or Target's and get very inexpensive prescription drugs. So this is an area where Walmart is really being what I call kind of like the Henry Ford of healthcare. They're finding ways to take an otherwise more expensive service or product, lower the price, advertise it, and save consumers money. And their estimates are to date that they've saved $1 billion for consumers in terms of reduced prescription drug costs.
So that's one example of a problem with healthcare, rising drug costs, that healthcare entrepreneurs are setting out to solve. Can you give us an example of another problem and another entrepreneur who's trying to solve it?
Sure. One of the problems that's happening as the U.S. ages is that there is an increasing need for primary care physicians to treat, diagnose, and hopefully help prevent chronic illnesses, because there's a lot of data out there that supports the idea that when people have access to routine, easily available preventive care through a primary care physician, that healthcare costs are lowered, outcomes improve, and mortality decreases. But primary care physicians are, to some extent, being driven out of the field because of declining reimbursements from Medicare and Medicaid, flat or declining reimbursements through those two programs, and also having to deal with increasing red tape headaches from private insurers who place all sorts of administrative burdens on these primary care physicians. So what primary care physicians are trying to do is lower the amount of red tape they have to deal with, raise their reimbursements, but also offer improved services and more healthcare value to consumers by making their offices friendlier to consumers and their families. For instance, one doctor, Kevin Kelleher in Virginia, and his colleagues have moved into what's called almost a concierge care situation, where their patients pay a flat monthly fee from $150, I think, up to $400 for unlimited primary care access each month, where they get access to their physicians through email, through cell phone, and get more time per visit. I think when most of us go into the physician's office these days, we're in there for just a couple minutes. The doctor hands us a prescription and sends us out the door, because physicians have to see many more patients every day just to break even. In this model, the doctor has much more time to spend with every patient to really talk about preventive issues, long-term health maintenance issues, and ensure the patient is getting the most for their healthcare dollars, rather than just almost a McDonald's-style healthcare where you're just getting minimal value and getting sent out the door. I think in the long term, moving to that type of relationship where the patient pays a little more out of pocket for primary care access but gets more value for the service will better sustain both primary care physicians, who will have a better income and more incentive to stay in the primary care system, and patients who need better management of chronic care conditions, particularly as they age.
And to ask you just about one that I personally find interesting, are they called convenient care clinics that are starting to sprout up? I've been seeing things that look like this in my neighborhood, little clinics inside drugstores. Can you talk a little about those?
Right. So back in 2006, the founder of one of the clinics called Minute Clinics was trying to get his son in to see a physician for, I believe it was strep throat. and he couldn't find any physician to take his son that day for what was basically just a few minutes long test to culture his throat to see if he did in fact have this bacterial infection. He couldn't do it, and he thought, well, this isn't rocket science, this isn't heart disease, this isn't cancer, why can't I get fast access to a relatively simple service at an affordable price? He couldn't do it, and therefore he decided to go into business for himself and offer these services. Convenient care clinics offer a menu of services, typically that can be performed in 15 to 20 minutes, that are relatively low cost, often for $50 or less, so that consumers who either can't get in to see a doctor the day they need to see one, or maybe who are just shopping and just decide in one of these stores like a Duane Reade's or a Walmart, they might like to get their cholesterol checked, can just walk into an office staffed by a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner, very skilled healthcare professionals who are offering these very quick, very affordable services in ways that are much less expensive than they would be if they were offered in a doctor's office.
Now let me play devil's advocate for a second. I understand the argument for healthcare entrepreneurs, the idea that patients are consumers like any others, and just as you have a more or less free market in, say, groceries, why shouldn't you have one in healthcare too, in which these entrepreneurs would compete against each other for patient services. But isn't a pretty one objection, in fact, that you raise in your story and then address, is that healthcare is a lot more complicated than, say, buying groceries. I can go to two different grocery stores, see where eggs cost more, and then go to the other one to buy the eggs. If you're a patient, it's really hard to know what's going on. So could you talk a little about how that is going to work in this expanding healthcare market?
Sure. It's a legitimate objection. What you're raising is the fact that it's relatively easy to compare costs for these single unit items, whether it's a television or a carton of eggs. Right. So we need much better data on pricing and outcome and the quality of bundles of services for things like, say, a hip transplant that make it much easier for consumers to shop and that aren't available very widely today or very easily today. But that situation is certainly changing as services like WebMD and another service I talk about called Best Doctors are getting out there and acting as intermediaries to bundle information for consumers that allows them to do the kind of thing that you just pointed out, which is to find data on quality and price for healthcare services in a reliable, transparent way that, in fact, does allow them to become shoppers. Now, we need to do much more of that. And one way we need to do that is by making the focus of healthcare spending more at the consumer level.
Now, one last question, I think. The name of the story, again, is Healthcare's New Entrepreneurs. One question that seems to raise is, why are they new? Presumably, if all this were easy, it would have been done long ago. So could you talk just a little about some of the obstacles that exist to being a healthcare entrepreneur of this kind, and then following that, what policymakers should do about those obstacles?
Right. I think the reason that healthcare entrepreneurship, although, of course, there are always entrepreneurs in an economy, that this is, in effect, a neglected niche in the American economy is because for a long time, the dominant mode provision of health insurance was through employers. And people just took it for granted that they were going to get insurance through their employers and weren't thinking very much about what the cost of that insurance was or what kind of goods and services would be bundled with that, because it was basically, you know, kind of a vanilla approach to health insurance. It was all fee for service, and the cost out of pocket to the consumer was not substantial. We've moved into an economy where the cost out of pocket to the consumer is rising rapidly, and employers are looking for ways to exit the provision of healthcare services because they found, quite frankly, they can't control costs very well. I think that what we need to do is to level the playing field between insurance that is provided through an employer, which is currently tax-free, and an individual buying insurance out on the open market for themselves, which is taxed. Now, this is a real disincentive for consumers and individuals to purchase insurance in the first place and to become more savvy about exactly what kinds of products and services they should be purchasing. We've made some inroads in this area through health savings accounts, but I think we need to do much more in terms of creating national markets for health insurance, allowing individuals or even groups to shop for packages of insurance and services across state lines. Individual regulators at the state level can do a lot more to encourage the proliferation of things like these convenient care clinics, which allow people to make use of very inexpensive healthcare services rather than, say, going to an emergency room, which we know happens an awful lot at the time, that's very expensive. So we need to give consumers more of an incentive through the tax structure to become smart healthcare shoppers, and then streamline regulations so that we encourage competition across state lines, both for insurance products and for insurance services.
Well, thanks very much, Paul. This podcast, as well as the text of Paul's story, Healthcare's New Entrepreneurs, and much, much more, are available on the City Journal website, www.city-journal.org. Thanks for listening.